Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome. Hope you're enjoying that week between the holidays. Many people take this time to be with family and hopefully the world slows down for you. I know the news business certainly slows down. A lot of our newsbusters take time off and some of us try to hold down the fort. I took a different vacation time this year like the politicos do. I went back to Wisconsin the week after Election Day in Virginia this year. I did get some time here before Christmas to sit down with the wife and watch on Disney Plus this new documentary called Get Back on the Beatles. It reassembles footage of John, Paul, George, and Ringo trying to make music as the band begins to fall apart. I mean, it's massively long and it bogs down and it's like, who's watching this for fun? Nonetheless, NPR, National Public Radio, used the occasion for some guilt trip clickbait on Twitter, asking, how did we get stuck with the idea that four white guys make a rock band? Our question is, well, who is the royal we here? We got stuck with this? We might think that the rock band includes women like Heart, like the Wilson sisters. It might include the Bangles. There are girl rock bands. And then there's Clarence Clemens playing the sax with Bruce Springsteen. So, I mean, this is just classic. I want to get the woke crowd in here. We'll say rock is all about white guys. Which reminds me, you know, just a few weeks ago, Nicole Hannah-Jones, with her little 1619 project book that's out, went around getting all sorts of softball interviews. Well, she gave probably the worst one, was this long interview on NPR on the show Fresh Air, which can easily be called stale air because it seems like only lefties get on and there's no debate. It's just a lot of softball questions to lefties. And then there's this part, I wrote about this, but there's a part of it, the interview I never got around to, but I wanted to, and that is sort of mocking the so-called racist roots of yacht rock. They have a 1619 podcast, I guess. So Wesley Morris, who's a black music critic of the New York Times, was sort of going through some of these 80s hits, some of my favorites, and some 70s hits. So it's Toto's Rosanna. It's a classic. One of my favorite 45 RPM records, What a Fool Believes by the Doobie Brothers. So they got Do It Again by Steely Dan. And Goodbye Stranger by Supertramp, which is, well, that's more my older sister's band. She had that Breakfast in America LP. These are also apparently examples of racist cultural appropriation. You know, it's a little shocking they didn't get to Boz Scaggs. You know, I had Boz Scaggs records. My college roommate at Bemidji made fun of my records. I like the Blue-Eyed Soul. But of course, you know, Wesley Morris was saying, what I'm hearing in all of these songs is basically blackness. You know, NPR is all about how white musicians in the 1970s and the 1980s took the road to fame by drawing very heavily on black musical forms. And then they claimed this is basically what's been happening for centuries. Well, rock music isn't centuries old, but you hear them. And so, you know, Wesley Morris is supposed to be charming because he has a fond regard for these yacht rock artists. I don't know if they really all fit what I would call yacht rock. But, you know, what's funny is that when you go and find a yacht rock playlist on Spotify, and I get lost on Spotify, their yacht rock playlist includes Bill Withers and Michael Jackson, Al Jarreau, and the Pointer Sisters. So they're basically suggesting yacht rock is multicultural. The list also has Bobby Caldwell's song, What You Won't Do For Love, where the black people are like, what? Bobby Caldwell's not black? And then what's funny is when hip-hop artists literally sample these white bands, like De La Soul used that awesome song Peg by Steely Dan in one of their records. You know, what appropriates more than hip hop? But of course, hip hop was originated by black people. Everybody understands that. So there's you never question cultural appropriation in rap. But the point here, that what kind of annoyed me about all of this is, people aren't segregated when they listen to music. Most people, any more than only people only limit themselves to one ethnicity of food. You know, the alleged racism here is about genres. What is rock? What is R&B? What is pop? And so this artificially sets up rock to be a white male preserve, because yes, it's what white males like to listen to. Many of its stars are white males. But white people also love Motown. White people love jazz. White people love classical and country, and you can have them all. Darius Rucker can be a black rock star and then change and become a black country star. But what's funny is then in this interview, NPR asks Nicole Hannah-Jones,
"We aren't wearing your hat as a chronicler of racial disparity or scourge of conservatives. When you're just driving to the grocery store and the Doobie Brothers comes on, how do you feel?"
Well, that never happens because I don't listen to the type of stations that would play the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah, that's right. She's saying she doesn't really listen to the white interlopers. Who's the musical segregationist now? I mean, this is one of those things that gets me. It's like, yes, we have, to some degree, people go to white churches and black churches. That happens. We, you know, black people are more likely to like R&B and hip hop. And white people might like rock more. But it's just because you've chosen something doesn't mean it's racist. But of course, Nicole Hannah-Jones wants to make this a whole lecture about how, as W.E.B. Du Bois said, what would America be without her Negro people? And, I mean, it gets worse. She said, we need to stop saying black American music and American music because they're redundant, because black music is American music, period, even when you don't think it is. This is exactly the flip side of this hustle, that somehow whites make everything better, that everything that's great about America is whiteness. If we tried to claim that, obviously we would sound racist. But obviously blacks can never be racist. This is one of those things. You certainly can't say a black is racist on NPR, unless, of course, you're a black conservative. Nicole Hannah-Jones and her crew basically like to suggest, when they want to sound academic, that race is a social construct used by white people for their own political and financial gain. That's the conspiracy theory. So Hall & Oates or Steely Dan or the Doobie Brothers, Michael McDonald, made some Motown records, actually, you know, just ripping off, you know, the black music. Nicole Hannah-Jones calls this historically informed journalism in the service of democracy. That's not what I call it. It's historically defective propaganda in the service of manufacturing white guilt. And this sort of takes us back to the other thing, that where NPR's music critic Ann Powers had this long treatise on how the Beatles imply racism. It doesn't matter that the Beatles loved black music and were big progressives. It doesn't matter that they wouldn't play segregated venues. They were still somehow part of making rock music hopelessly white. Or as Ann Powers put it, rock's defining narrative still stands alongside others that reflect the historic segregation of Anglo-American social spheres. Nobody said the black people couldn't be Beatles fans. You know, you had that whole movie Yesterday where the Indian guy loves the Beatles, and in the weird world he was living in, nobody'd heard the Beatles songs. So he became a big star singing the Beatles songs like they were his own. That was cute. They also made that kind of a music movie about Springsteen. Now, was that somehow a disgusting cultural appropriating trend? I mean, NPR's point here is trying to keep the white people perennially confessional about white privilege. Power started with rock buddies Paul McCartney and Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters being so-called band guys. Then she added that that term was problematic. And then we get that lecturing sentence. In 2021, it's as common for women, trans, and non-binary people to jump into rock's time stream as it is for men. Yet something continues to infuse the rock mythos with the sweaty sock scent of conventional, if boyish, masculinity. Whiteness, too. Yeah, this is the sort of thing where you just want to say, hey, NPR, go home and take your sweaty socks criticism with you. If you don't like the Beatles, then just say so. Now, Ann Powers would tell you she loves the Beatles. Well, then stop doing this to them. You wouldn't say you loved somebody and then smack them in the face and call them a racist. Jeez, I mean, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones wouldn't play segregated venues. They paid big tribute to the black musicians who inspired them. They sometimes toured with them. But Powers had to drag out this guy, Greg Tate, this guy that used to write for The Village Voice. She called him a late, great music writer. He called it a pasteurized form of black culture. Tate called it everything but the burden. You know, this is one of those things where the guilt is just, I mean, it's gooey, it's oozy. They're basically suggesting this is, you know, the Beatles are a Velveeta cheese of black music. You're always supposed to feel guilty. You can never invent anything on your own that might borrow from something old. That's basically what writing songs is about. But to them, it's all got to be some sort of form of cultural appropriation and racial terrorism, and you know, I don't know. You know, even the new Beatles documentary to NPR's Ann Powers somehow demonstrates systemic racism, because she cites Questlove, you know, the black musician who leads Jimmy Fallon's band. He did a documentary on the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival. She said that felt like a newly uncovered landmark in the recentered cultural world, emerging in step with the movement for black lives. The Beatles one, then, she says, reasserts familiar hierarchies. The hierarchy is people love the Beatles. That's it. And if you want to make it all about whites loving whites, well, then you're the one with the problem. I mean, can't we just love the Beatles without feeling like you're reinforcing segregation? Powers wants to pretend we're still living back in the 60s. She quoted some cover story in Time magazine on the sound of the 60s, saying the Beatles made it all right to be white again. She left out the next sentence, which was all about how somehow, since the downfall of the Viennese waltz, nothing in pop music gets anywhere without the rhythmic discoveries of the Negro. That doesn't sound like a racist article to me. Now, I'm positive somewhere in my old collection of records or cassettes, CDs, my Spotify playlist, I've got some extremely white pop music on there. Maybe nobody's going to break my stride. I don't know. But I definitely have some white music in there where you would say, yeah, I'm not getting much black in that. But it's just so tiring, the guilt tripping. The PBS NewsHour website did a version of this right before Christmas. They were complaining that Asians aren't the stars of Christmas movies. Christmas movies are all about the so-called white fantasy of Christmas. So the PBS correspondent goes and finds some radical Muslim feminist to slam the white Christmas music or the white Christmas movies. You know, now there was one interesting point in there where she said, I watch these movies and there really isn't anything about the baby Jesus. There's not a lot of Christianity in the Christmas movies. Yes, the holiday is sort of the setting. It's Jingle Bells and Kissing Under the Mistletoe. And the same happens in Christmas music. You know, the most popular Christmas music, the one that's going to be all over the malls, the one that's going to be featured in the old Michael Bublé special or the Rockin' Around Rockefeller Center. I mean, they're going to do the Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow. They're going to probably not do Oh Come All Ye Faithful. So, yeah, we'd sure love some actual Christmas in our Christmas. But, you know, what was funny about this whole piece was they were complaining about there are no Asian American or Asian leads in Christmas rom-coms, and they kind of totally left out a movie that some of us saw in 2019 called Last Christmas, which co-starred Henry Golding, who is Indian and British. Charming little movie, a little depressing at times, but, you know, it's the guilt tripping just gets so tiresome. So, you know, yeah, PBS has got to go out and hire somebody who's going to basically represent guilt tripping on the Asian American tip. You know, fine, try to make your argument, but it's like the assumptions that these people run around with about white conspiracy thinking. You know, it's just, it gets annoying after a while. Yeah, so if you're going to make your point, don't try to claim there isn't a Christmas movie with Asian Americans in, and then just go make one. Hollywood's going to let you make one. They cited some examples, they just weren't very mainstream. Now, the other thing that happens about now, at this time between the holidays, is we talk about Kwanzaa. Kamala Harris is doing this again, trying to talk about how she grew up with Kwanzaa, like they were like the original four mothers of Kwanzaa. So some people want to be very pro-Kwanzaa. Then there's the conservative trolls who want to find it fun and troll it the other way, like, you know, Kwanzaa. It's this ridiculous Marxist, you know, radical holiday. You know, I'm just of the opinion of, like, if you want to have your affirmative Negro Kwanzaa festival, then that's fine. But it's so funny the way that people feel like they have to pay their homage to it, or somehow, you know, if you want to say that Christmas is for whites and Asians and blacks and Hispanics, that is great. That is true. So I wanted to mention I had the I received for Christmas the Dave Grohl book, the memoir, The Storyteller. Haven't quite gotten into that yet. But I know there's going to be one thing in there with Dave Grohl, and that is Dave Grohl's not going to discuss how he stole all the black music. you know, Nirvana. Did Nirvana sound like rhythm and blues? I don't know. And then the other book that I was given by the wife was Stanley Tucci's Taste, My Life Through Food. I must confess, we found a CNN show we liked, but of course it was non-political. It was Stanley Tucci running around Italy tasting all the food. That is interesting. That we will sit and watch and imagine how good it tastes. And then somebody bought me a 1-pound Snicker bar. I hope they don't expect me to eat it in one sitting. So you have this picture. Here's Tim Graham with chocolate all over his face. No, you're supposed to slice and share. Mrs. Graham doesn't like nuts, so I won't share it so much. But we will be back. We will keep things up. We're going to get things going with the new year. And we hope you join us then. So until then, come to us once, twice, 24 times a day. Enjoy Newsbusters. And we thank you for listening.